On this episode of Skeptico.
I don't think you can get to the ultimate goal by quickly saying, oh, here are some meds that made me feel better for 5 minutes, so I was able to get up off the couch. You know, it's great to get up off the couch and not feel stuck and not feel depressed. But maybe looking deeper at what is the real purpose, meaning of life, maybe that's ultimately a better way to treat the underlying cause than to treat the symptom of just, how can I feel more joy right now? How can I feel better right now?
I agree with you that it's important to always be seeking greater depth and truth. That's one wing of a plane. The other wing of the plane is that you always be seeking some way to find a peace and love as quickly and as easily as possible. So when you put those two wings together, you can really fly. For people who just focus on feeling good, they have one very strong wing and they don't have the other wing that you mentioned, which is, you know, really seeking truth. If you have one wing of a plane that's very strong and one wing that's very weak, that plane flies around in circles and then crashes.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode, I try something a little bit new. You know, I'm always trying to mess with the show, trying to fiddle with the show, because if you remember way back at the beginning, I said this is about my journey shared with you. And I want to stay true to that because it really has always worked for me, and it keeps it fresh for me, and it keeps me wanting to push forward with this exploration. So at this point, one of the things I want to explore is this kind of idea of comparing notes, if you will. So it's one thing to talk to skeptics and materialists and every once in a while just to kind of, like I said before, put the mirror in their face and say, look how ridiculous you really sound given the science that we know of. But I also want to move past that and talk to people who know a lot of things that broadly, in a general sense, agree with some of the findings that I've discovered through Skeptico, but also don't totally agree with some of the things I've found through Skeptico. And when Jonathan Robinson contacted me about doing an interview for his new book, The Technology of Joy, my first reaction was, I don't want to do this book. But my next reaction, as I really got to know him, he's really a pretty amazing guy. And I thought, hey, I want to compare notes with this guy. This guy has been on this journey for a while, and he's really, really done some amazing stuff. I want to compare notes. And that's what I've tried to do in this interview. By the way, when the interview seems to end, it hasn't really ended. He has a couple of things to add at the end, which also just kind of blew my mind. You know, here's a guy who was in the parapsychology lab because he had PK ability. And that doesn't even come up until the interview's all the way over. And I thought that was pretty interesting. So I've included that at the end. Here goes. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome psychotherapist and best-selling author Jonathan Robinson to Skeptico. Jonathan originally contacted me because he has a new book out. It's titled The Technology of Joy, The Best 101 Apps, Gadgets, Tools, and Supplements for Feeling More Delight, which is normally not the kind of book we talk about on Skeptico. But in my email exchanges with Jonathan, I found him to be a very interesting guy and open to exploring, I think, some of the deeper questions that are connected with these topics of joy and happiness and spirituality and all that wonderful stuff, but are also connected to a lot of the topics we talk about here on Skeptico. So, Jonathan, welcome to Skeptico. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Alex. I think it'll be a fun exploration.
I think so, too. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, you have written some really pretty, amazing books, and you have an amazing background. The Experience of God. You interviewed people like Mother Teresa, Dalai Lama, many other people. Life's Big Questions, which sounds kind of presumptuous, but hey, a New York Times bestseller and a book. I am really into questions myself and the power of questions. I have a list of questions I review every day, and I just believe they're like magic. When you ask yourself questions, you get answers. So I'm a big believer in that. And you even wrote The Complete Idiot's Guide to Awakening Your Spirituality, which before anyone scoffs, I have to say I dipped into and I found it to be amazingly practical and, dare I say, insightful. So I think you've done a great job. And you've been on the Oprah Show many times. And you have this latest book that hopefully we'll talk maybe a little bit about, The Technology of Joy. I mean, what a great writing career. Tell us more about who you are and what this journey is all about for you.
Well, I was very lucky to grow up in an incredibly dysfunctional family. And I say lucky because when that happens, you're kind of forced to either grow or sink. And by the time I was 12, I was into meditation and hypnosis and got into self-help books. I was always looking for how to be happy, because not only was my family depressed and stressed out, but my brother and sister were as well. And luckily, you know, 95% of everything is crap, including self-help books, but 5% is good stuff. So I find the 5% that worked for me. I got focused on what can you do in under 2 minutes a day that can really make a difference in your life, because I'm kind of lazy. And I wanted to find if there were any technologies that could really make me feel more love or peace or gratitude. And over a period of time, there were. I wrote books about them, and Oprah liked the book, so I got on her show a bunch. And the latest book, The Technology of Joy, is really an extension of that. You know, how can technology help us to have lives of more depth and meaning and love and peace? And luckily, there now are some technologies that work really well.
Well, let's talk about that. But, you know, you covered a ton of ground there, which, you know, you have to do. We don't know each other and our audience doesn't know you. Interesting. I mean, interesting stuff. I remember one little snippet story that, you know, where you talked to your dad at a certain point and he was an atheistic kind of guy and you were off exploring all this spirituality, and you had this encounter with him where you start asking him questions and it opened up to some kind of deeper things. So it sounds like you've been on this journey and it hasn't just been about technology like this latest book is, that I think sucks people in. Hey, what nutrient can I take, or what, you know, therapy can I do, or massage or aromatherapy or whatever, what can I do to get more happiness, get more joy? But I think you're also really have spent a good amount of time looking at much, I guess what most people would say, deeper questions. So I don't know, where do we begin? I guess, let me start with this, because here's what I thought I would do. I've been wanting to do on this show for the longest time this idea of comparing notes, you know? So now I've been at this little skeptical thing for 7 or 8 years and talked to a bunch of really, really smart people and wrote a little book on why science is wrong about almost everything. And I love talking to other people that have really, really, like you have, read broadly, tried to suck in as much as you can, try to find out what works, what doesn't work. So I thought we'd kind of compare notes and see where we're at. So let's start with the really big question. The question I always like to ask: who are we? Why are we here? Who are we? Why are we here?
Oh, the easy stuff. I like starting with the easy stuff. Well, you know, when I wrote this book, I edited the book, The Experience of God, I got to interview all 40 of the most known spiritual leaders in the world. And as you mentioned, you know, Dalai Lama, Deepak Chopra, Ram Dass, Wayne Dyer, Mother Teresa, you know, a bunch of other people. And one of the questions I would ask him that question, you know, why are we here? What's the purpose of life? And I'd ask him other questions as well, like what's your favorite method for tapping into peace or things like that. But, you know, when it came to the big questions, everybody agreed. It didn't matter whether I was talking to the Buddhist Dalai Lama or Pat Boone, who's a born-again Christian, or Mother Teresa. Everybody said the exact same thing. And I thought that was really fascinating. Because if I asked them any other question, like, you know, what's the best way to find peace? You know, a Christian would say Jesus, a Buddhist would say meditate, a Hindu would say something else. But there seemed to be a lot of agreement as to what the purpose of life is. And so $4.95, I will send you that information. No, I'm kidding. this is what everybody seemed to say, that the purpose of life is to they really put it into two categories. Number one purpose of life is to get to a point where you have found some peace and love within yourself, that you are have, you know, a sense of the kingdom of heaven within. It's what Jesus called it, or Buddha called your Buddha nature, that you find some peace and love within yourself. And then from your foundation of peace and love, go out and serve people in the world. You can't give what you don't have. So if you have no peace and love in your heart, it's going to be very hard to be a good parent. It's going to be very hard to be a good friend. So I see that what I've been doing is trying to find what are the best, most efficient ways for people to find this peace and love. And how can technology perhaps even help that, so that people can, instead of meditating for 40 years in a cave, can use some gadget or something that they can find that in 40 minutes rather than 40 years. And that's been an interest of mine, because I think only if you change the quality of human beings and their experience will you create a better, more peaceful world.
Awesome. And so the last part of that we might have to kind of break off and do separately in terms of a more better world and all the rest of that. But so we have to kind of develop this base of contentment, peace, joy kind of thing. And that's what you're saying. You're open to a lot of different technologies and means that would get us there. And then ultimately our life, once you get to that point, you realize your life is about service and about helping other people, both as a way to further get that joy into your life, but also Why a life of service? Why do we serve?
Well, I think that if you asked your hand why it's serving your body, and your hand could talk, it would say, because I'm part of the body, and if I want this hand to be healthy, I need to actually feed the body because we're connected. And I believe that it's the same with people, that we are basically a one swarm of humanity. And we serve our function best when we realize we're one cell in that humanity. And by serving that humanity in a certain way, we're actually serving ourselves. And it feels good and will get us closer to even more peace. Or if you believe in God, a better relationship with God, and certainly will help you to be more loving, because you are doing loving actions in the world. So what goes around comes around.
Okay, great. Love it. Okay, let me take a slightly different, slightly oppositional angle on that. We're talking today on this wonderful Skype device over the tremendous internet, you know, and we have this highly advanced technology that drives our culture. We've come to believe that science is really behind all that. Science tells us over and over again, we're biological robots in a meaningless universe. That's who we are. Our mind equals our brain. You're telling us something quite different from that. Even though you're willing to borrow and use some technologies, you fundamentally you're saying something very different. Isn't that a lot to process? I have to say for myself, and that's what led me into Skeptico, that was a lot to process. And that is that I'm being told something that now completely conflicts with this spirituality model that you're saying. Because you're saying, hey, we're all connected. We are more than our brains. We are more than just that fMRI that showed my serotonin uptake wasn't working, and that's why you gave me these pills and all the rest of that. You're saying much more. Science mm-hmm. is saying, no, no, no. Isn't that a problem?
Well, I think that there's different levels of science, and that science is getting better and better. So nowadays, the top scientists in their fields would tend to agree with everything I just said, that we're all connected, that, I mean, you and I currently have over a million of the atoms that were in Jesus and Buddha. That's how connected we are. They've been gone a couple thousand years, but everything is so, you know, so connected in this world and recycled that, according to quantum physics and other things, that
everything
is...
Hold on, Jonathan. What top scientist would say that? I just interviewed the guy who has the number one best-selling book on Amazon right now, astrophysicist Caltech. Completely disagrees with everything that you're saying. Consciousness science, it completely, for the most part, you know, it's a real battle. The whole idea of quantum physics is very, very, you know, debatable, whether the observer effect is real, whether we collapse the wave function, all that stuff, which I think is undeniably true and proven scientifically. But to say that, you know, I hate when we perpetuate that idea that science is totally on board with this stuff. No, it's not at all. Science is very, very much stuck in this idea that you are a product of your brain. Your brain is who you are. And when your brain ends, your life ends, your consciousness ends. You're saying something different, right?
Well, I agree with you that the science is such that there's a range from the scientists that believe we are only biological machines, that we're not connected, all these things. And then there's scientists that think on the other end of that spectrum. So, you know, we could argue forever which one is true. I tend to look at not so much that way because you can just get often in debating. I look at it in terms of what's practical. I'm trying to get human beings to feel good, including myself. I'm trying to get human beings to feel more love. I'm trying to get human beings to feel more peace, more gratitude. Now, with a goal like that, you can ask what method helps people to get there more efficiently. So it's kind of a scientific approach to that. And what I have found is that different things work for different people. You know, I'm not one. If scientific analysis of being a biological machine and nothing more works for you, I'd say fantastic. That's what you should do.
Why? Why is that fantastic and that's what you should do? Don't the big picture questions matter? I mean, you can dedicate your life to material things. And now we can ask whether or not that's okay, or whether there's any morality to it. But I mean, we look around. You're obviously someone who's had spiritual experiences, extended mm-hmm. consciousness experiences, like yeah. I like to call them. Why would we kind of equate that with someone who is really bound up in a materialistic kind of view that, you know, it's all about me, it's all about what I get, and say, hey, man, whatever floats your boat. I don't believe that. Do you really believe that?
Well, there's people have all kinds of ridiculous beliefs, you know, and no belief, whether it be my spiritual beliefs or somebody else's scientific beliefs, beliefs are not the same as reality. Reality is very complex. Now, with reality being complex, you can say, well, okay, what do we want to do? And now, as I mentioned before, there is a lot of agreement among spiritual leaders as to what the purpose of life is. And they say the purpose of life is to feel more loving, more peaceful, and then from your abundance, be able to better serve people. Now, even if that's wrong, I think it's still a good thing to pursue because you feel better and you're helping people. So I don't know if that's the truth, but I'd say even if it weren't the truth, it still works for me as a good thing to pursue. So if that's the goal, then the question becomes, how do you get to that goal? And there's all kinds of ways to get to that goal. Different things work for different people. And what I try to do in the Technology of Joy book or some of my other books is give people the cutting edge methods for helping them to tap into that peace and love. Because I think if people are tapped in to that, that one, they'll feel better. Two, they'll be better human beings. Three, better human beings create more harmony on Earth. And I think that's a good thing. When you get into which way is best, well, I think different things really work for different people. I have a friend that's a born-again Christian. I'm not a born-again Christian, but they're a wonderful human being, and I just totally encourage them to do what they're doing because I like being around their energy. And I know somebody who is totally anti-spiritual, and yet he meditates. And when he meditates, he feels a lot better, and I'm encouraging him to meditate. He doesn't have to believe in God or any stuff in order to meditate. He just knows that when he quiets his mind, he feels better. So I think it's better to look at things in terms of practical effects we're trying to create rather than what is really true or what really isn't true, where you just get lost into arguing beliefs, and we've seen religious wars and everything else doesn't really go anywhere.
I disagree. For me, the way that I'm wired, I have to know, I have to answer in a logical, rational way the best that I can before I can proceed. And I think a lot of people are like that. I think in particular, a lot of men are like that. I mean, we look at Scientology, at least a lot of us, and laugh and say, you know, that's obviously a cult that was created by a science fiction writer who was trying to make a bunch of money. You know, look at, yeah, is it yeah or is it no? I mean, we look at, you know, so the born again thing. I have many friends who are born again Christians, and they are some wonderful people. I have some Mormon friends who are really, particularly if you can generalize like this, but it's been my experience, are some of the most truly open, honest, kind of cool people to be around. I do not hesitate to talk about the ridiculousness of the baby Jesus hypothesis, not to kind of poke them, but to say, am I reading something different than you are? Are you processing something that I don't know? Because otherwise I feel like it would be disingenuous for us to have this kind of relationship and for me to say, I think you've been indoctrinated the same way that I've indoctrinated and haven't availed yourself of some of the knowledge, some of the information that would cause you to change your beliefs. But I don't even care about that. What I care about is what kind of conversation might we have? What kind of interaction might we have once you get past that? Because when you're stuck in the baby Jesus hypothesis, well, then any kind of real connection we're going to have between this left hand, if you want to go back to your hand analogy, in this right hand is going to be really, really limited. And we're going to have these kind of stupid conversations that most of us have had all our life where we dance around and don't talk about the real important, deepest stuff because we don't want to offend somebody or we don't want to really talk about the stuff that's going on. So I don't know if I really can buy off on the kind of shut up and calculate model of spirituality. I want to know the truth the best I can know it.
Well, let me ask you, Alex, let's say you could know the truth as best you can know it, that what do you hope to have happen from, quote, knowing the truth?
Well, I think there's one, a certain grounding that comes in that, because a lot of us have this cognitive dissonance that we all feel, you know, where we're pulled in one direction, but we have our doubts and our confusions on the other. And when that is settled in any number of ways, I think all of us can relate to that being able to propel us forward, being able to feel more comfortable in our own skin and more accepting of other people. So I see it as being positive in those ways. Do you have any sense of that? Or,
well, what I hear you say is that if you knew this truth or knew it in a deeper way, you'd feel more grounded, more comfortable, and more accepting. And I agree, you would. And so I would say your pursuit of truth is actually a technique to help you to feel more grounded, more peaceful, more comfortable, more accepting. And as a technique, I'd say if it works for you, great. I think those are good goals, to feel more grounded, peaceful, and accepting. So your technique is called being a skeptic and trying to seek truth. And then I would say keep doing it if it's working for you. Other people are going to have the technique of Jesus or Buddha, or what I put forth is now there's all these technologies that can help you to tap into that right away. So I think, and this is just a philosophical opinion, that getting to the ultimate goal we're trying to get to more quickly is better than taking 50 years. But
what is the ultimate goal? I mean, I guess that would be the bigger question, because I think you cannot get to the ultimate goal without going through the path of truth. I don't think you can get to the ultimate goal by bypassing it and quickly saying, oh, here are some meds that made me feel better for 5 minutes, so I was able to get up off the couch. You know, it's great to get up off the couch and not feel stuck and not feel depressed. But maybe looking deeper at what is the real purpose, meaning of life, and figuring out some of those questions that you were answering, maybe that's ultimately a better way to treat the underlying cause than to treat the symptom of just, how can I feel more joy right now? How can I feel better right now? Because that can be, you know, an endless rat on the wheel kind of process as well. And we've all experienced that. And I say that, Jonathan, as someone who does practice these things on a daily basis, practices questions, practices yoga, practices meditation, positive affirmations, totally into a lot of those things, but only if I am equally engaged in nudging a little bit closer to this truth does it really even mean anything to me.
Well, you make a good point, Alex, that, you know, people can abuse anything. So I'm not talking about just, you know, feel good distraction. That's, we both know, doesn't leave a good ring. When we see somebody like that, oh, you know, they're doing something that just kind of entertains them or makes them feel good for the moment, we don't feel a depth in them of that they've really touched their deeper life purpose and meaning. You know, it looks like they you know, you could take heroin and feel good, but not many of us would say, wow, that person's really growing. So I agree with you that it's important to always be seeking greater depth and truth. That's one wing of a plane. The other wing of the plane is that you always be seeking some way to find a peace and love as quickly and as easily as possible. So when you put those two wings together, you can really fly and really go somewhere. For people who just focus on feeling good, they have one very strong wing and they don't have the other wing that you mentioned, which is, you know, really seeking truth and really being always inquiring in deeper ways. If you have one wing of a plane that's very strong and one wing that's very weak, that plane flies around in circles and then crashes.
So then why do we have to listen to the baby Jesus hypothesis? Why do we have to be, is it important to be open to, you know, your born-again Christian friends? Or do you need to say, hey, one of your wings over here, I don't understand how that wing helps you fly? I mean, because, right, that's what you're saying. And they can get the joy part and all that, and we see that. But they have this other wing. I don't understand how their wing really makes them fly.
Well, if that person is only focused on one wing and not always focusing on questions and deepening their experience, it'll tend to not, as I said, you'll fly around in circles after a while. And we've seen that with whether it be Buddhists or Christians or anybody doing one thing, it can get stale after a while. So I always say you have to balance out these two forces, the forces of what's helping you right now to feel more joyous and peaceful, and that you always be, you know, focused on that. But you also be always open to exploring new ways and deeper ways and being a little bit skeptical, that creates a certain balance that means that you're always moving forward. And this is not easy to do. Most people really will focus on one wing or the other. Skeptics have the problem that they're always focusing on the questions and the skepticism, and that can lead to even cynicism. And when that happens, they miss out on all the joy and love. So that's another way that you can fly around in circles and not get anywhere. So balancing out these two forces is not easy. And you have to see which of your two wings tends to be stronger and focus on the other one, which people don't like to do. Because when you're really good at one thing, you don't want to give it up to focus on something else.
I think that's a fair point on the two wings. And when you're really good on one, you don't want to focus on the other. So let's try and find that balance with you're all about love, all about joy. You have all the techniques. If I can, in this conversation, people should go out and buy the book, The Technology of Joy. Easy to read. You'll find something in there that you'll like. There's great stuff, many things that you've never heard about. You'll immediately find some of them you're drawn to and say, hey, I'm going to go check that out. And that makes it worthwhile. So I recommend it. I've glanced through it. I've found a bunch of cool stuff in it. So I do that. But that's your one wing, Jonathan.
Yeah.
That's your one wing.
Right.
Your other wing is this other stuff, you know. So Ram Dass. Love Ram Dass.
Yeah.
Think he's awesome, right?
Yeah.
Psychedelics, man. Psychedelic. Hundreds and hundreds of hits of LSD is what brought him to Neem Karoli Baba.
Yeah.
What brought him to the greater experience. What's up with that? So, you know, you mentioned heroin because we can all go, ooh, heroin's bad. What about psychedelics? Is that a good way to experience this extended consciousness realm? What about DMT? We interviewed Dr. Rick Strassman, who did, you know, clinical trials with DMT. Amazing results. And other psychedelics are being now tested more in terms of their effects on people. Hey, why stop there? What about psychedelics?
Well, I think that psychedelics in the right hands with the right attitude can be fantastic. It really can help with your exploration and help you see that the world is really, really complex and that there's no one view that is totally correct. So I think that just like anything, you can abuse psychedelics, but you can also use them in a way that helps with your exploration. I certainly have.
So helped in the exploration in terms of breaking through this illusion that we are these biological robots in a meaningless universe. That's the main thing that we're talking about there, right?
I think it can help you see through any strongly held belief that you can't see around, whether it be that belief or your belief that you're a child of God. You know, the world is very complex. It's not something that can be reduced to this or that. So psychedelics kind of open up your mind. And if you are kind of stuck on a belief system, and, you know, belief system, if you put into abbreviation, is BS, belief system. And any belief system that you are too stuck on will tend to inhibit your growth. So,
gosh, can we really make blanket statements like that? I mean, you're always moving from one belief system to another. They each are going to have their pluses and minuses. I mean, isn't that what we're always trying to do, is construct and deconstruct and reconstruct our belief system?
I totally agree. I think that some people just get stuck in a belief system and shut out everything else. And psychedelics or other technologies can help you to see around your belief systems, because the world is a lot bigger than our belief systems.
Okay. Extended consciousness beyond death, after-death communication, near-death experience, reincarnation. Is that a reality that people need to understand? And how is that belief or non-belief going to play into this?
Obviously, when you deal with, you know, what happens at death or after death, you have to do it with a little grain of salt and humility, because we can't know that much. But
why do we always preface that with that? Well, we can only know what we can know through other means. I mean, I just gotta, you know, like, we know so much about neurology because we see these fMRIs. You talk about bullshit. It's just, it can be proven ridiculously false in so many ways. You talk about after-death communication. You talk about near-death experience research, something we've looked at. You have hundreds of peer-reviewed papers. In after-death communication, you have scores and scores of published papers about spontaneous after-death communication, induced after-death communication, yeah, assisted after-death communication. A lot of research out there. Why do we have to roll out the boulder of salt beforehand and say, well, we don't really know what we're talking about here?
Well, I think you can know certain things. You can know that there has been research. Also, I was clinically dead for about 4 minutes, so I had a certain experience, and I can know I had that experience. And you can do research on people who've had similar experiences and see what they say and correlate that. So there is some stuff that we can know. But once again, lots of information doesn't necessarily mean we absolutely know the truth. Even in physics, you know, they're always getting more data. Is quantum physics the good description of reality? Well, it works most of the time, so you can say that, but you can't say it is the absolute truth. I'd say that we always get closer to approximating the truth the more experiences and the more data we get. So knowing that, you could say a lot of people who are clinically dead for a while and then come back to life, as I did, have a very similar experience. And that's very interesting. It doesn't matter if they're a Christian, a Jew, or a Hindu. They seem to have very similar experiences. And I find that fascinating.
Did you have what you would call a near-death experience? Did you travel? Do you have memories of traveling to some other realm, or even just being in this realm but being outside of your body?
Yeah, I had the typical experience where you see a light, you go down a tunnel, have a review of your life. I felt like I was being asked to look at my life and through the lens of how loving I had been. And those are all very typical experiences of people who clinically were dead and brought back to life. So I found that interesting because at the time I didn't know anything about this research, and I wasn't religious at the time. So it was pretty fascinating experience. And it was one data point. It's kind of like, you know, those connect the dot things where, you know, you have a bunch of dots and you're supposed to connect them. And then if you connect them, you see there's an elephant. Well, if you only have four dots on a page, you don't know it's an elephant. But if you have 500 dots and you connect them, it looks a lot like an elephant. So my life has been a series of putting on more dots on that page and then saying, well, it looks like there's really a meaning and purpose to life. And it looks like there's some energy intelligence that connects us. And it looks like it's a good idea to find joy and peace within, because when I do that, I feel better and other people feel better. But I'm always open to more dots in case the elephant actually happens to be a bully mammoth or something. And I think that when you devote your life to getting more truth, more dots, more data, you get more aligned with what really is. And when you're more aligned with what really is, then life tends to go better.
Awesome. I love that. Okay, so I appreciate you playing along with this little experimental game here in this dialogue. I know it's not the usual way to approach someone's book, but then what good is that anyway? One last question then, if we can.
Sure.
Let's talk about evil. Let's talk about the bad stuff in the world, because I think one of the problems that people have with people who are promoting, encouraging joy and happiness, which is, we can all say, is a wonderful thing. But a lot of folks feel like, hey, you are, while you're doing that, ignoring this other bad stuff. How do we deal with a lot of the negative, bad things that are out there that, if we're honest, are, you know, present in our life in the world?
Let's do it by process elimination of what doesn't work. It doesn't work to put your head in the sand and think positive thoughts while the world goes to hell in a handbasket. Are we agreeing about that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, to sort, yep.
Okay. That's one way. It also doesn't really do much good to be lost in the negativity and just, you know, say the sky is falling and be upset and angry and pissed off and self-righteous all the time. That doesn't seem to do oneself or the world any good either. So I don't think that's a good choice.
I'd agree.
And so then it leaves you with, well, try to get into a place within yourself where you feel empowered, you feel peaceful, and from your abundance, try to make things in the world a little bit better. And once again, that's exactly what the 40 spiritual leaders said was the actual meaning and purpose of life. And even if it's wrong, I think it's a good thing to do because, well, you feel better. The world hopefully gets an empowered you helping other people. And if we are ever to create a better world, a more peaceful world, more loving world, it will happen through individuals who can tap into more peace and love. And from that state of consciousness, better know how to be in the world in a way that is harmonious.
Excellent. Awesome. I love that. I have to say, you know, one other thing I've been playing around with more lately and seems to resonate with me is I think it's okay to resist the temptation to look down at all that evil. You know, it's one thing to understand that it's there. It's one thing to explore it and say, wow, that really is another way that I'm trying to, that whoever they are trying to kind of seduce me into getting out of my higher self. It's okay to just say, I'm not going to look there. I'm going to look up. I'm going to look where I can move myself forward, move my spiritual being forward. And I don't know, I've been playing with that, and I think that's has more benefit than it's sometimes given credit to, in that in the same way that we don't have to listen to everything that that little brain inside, our little mind generates, we don't have to listen to it, we don't have to listen to all of it, we don't have to react to every emotion, we don't have to react to every negative thing either. It's okay to not pay attention to it.
I agree that it doesn't serve after a while. You know, it's good. I think it's important to know about what's going on, but it can be like a black hole that if you get too focused on it, you just dive in and you never come back.
Okay. Well, Jonathan, I think I've grilled you enough. I have to, again, recommend to people this latest book. I'd also recommend many of Jonathan's other books. I think you'll find them really, really practical, down to earth, and like I said, in a way, just insightful in some ways that you might not expect from an easy reading kind of format. So his latest book is The Technology of Joy, The 101 Best Apps, Gadget Tools, and Supplements for Feeling More Delight in Your Life. I'm sure you'll find other interviews out there with a more extensive review of exactly what he's recommending, but hopefully you got a little bit of an introduction to the guy and what he's all about. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining me.
It's a real pleasure, Alex. I appreciate your questions and I like the exploration.
Okay, so as I said, there was then this little after-show conversation I thought was interesting. Here I'm going to include it for you.
I was a psychic studies major at UC Santa Barbara. Because I had what's called PK ability, the ability to affect random number generators, and I was really good at it. And I was going to go into that, but I realized the field was moving so slow that it would be like banging your head against a wall for 30 years. So I finally decided not to do that.
What's up with PK and how does it connect to spirituality?
Well, I don't know what's up with PK. I know that some people can do it, and I'm one of them because, you know, I was tested a lot. I put it in the realm of it works by something called PFM, which is how quantum physics in my iPhone works. And if you don't know what PFM is, PFM stands for pure fucking magic.
Right.
So that's how it works. And I don't even think it's necessarily connected to spirituality. I've known some really, really, you know, assholes who could do PK or had psychic abilities. I didn't think of them as a good person. You know, some people can run a 4-minute mile. Some people can affect random number generators, you know, and I think that it does show that we don't know everything about what's going on. And that's the most interesting thing. You know, we don't know everything what's going on in spirituality. We don't know everything about how our minds work. We don't know everything about ESP. And it's kind of like a Rorschach inkblot test. Whatever people think says more about them than it does about it, because we don't know. And it's hard to sit with not knowing. So we come up with all these belief systems, or BS, I call belief systems, which just shows that we don't feel comfortable sitting with not knowing. I know that PK works because I've been tested, and the ability to do what I do is in the realm of the chances of it doing it by chance, or like 1 in 50 billion. So I know that it happens. I don't know why it happens. But I find that it's interesting. And I think it points to the fact that everything is connected in some way. And as science progresses and our instruments get better, we'll soon learn more about how consciousness and spirituality and psychic abilities and quantum physics and all those things are interconnected.
That leads to one other thing that I think is really interesting to me. And, you know, since you've kind of gone down part of that path, you could probably have an interesting opinion on this. But I wonder what's going on with the whole non-dual approach, too, because people take it way too far sometimes of, you know, I'm not a person. I'm just floating in consciousness, and any identification with this ego-centered, you know, person who resides in the body of Jonathan. You know, I mean, and I get that on one level, because there's a certain often repeated truth that a lot of people seem to be pointing to, so maybe we should take it seriously. But at the other hand, it seems to kind of miss the point in a lot of ways, in that what you're talking about is loving people and kindness and gratitude and connecting with people. And what a lot of the people in the non-dual community are saying, yeah, if you want, but it's none of it really means anything anyway. It's all an illusion. We just need to get past the illusion. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, there's different levels of reality. And if you confuse the levels, then you end up with gibberish. You know, so on one level, we are all one. You know, you could say we're all made up of energy, if nothing else. But you don't want to use that as an excuse. You know, if we're living together and I say, hey, Alex, you haven't done the dishes, and your response is, hey, we're all one, you're confusing levels. So, yes, we are all one. And yes, you haven't done the dishes. So I think of it in terms of there's different ways to describe things, and some are more accurate. You can describe a Van Gogh painting as consisting of certain parts lead, certain parts oil, certain parts pigment. But that's not the best way to describe a Van Gogh painting, even though it is accurate on one level. A better way to describe a Van Gogh painting is, well, that really moves me, or that really is beautiful, or that really is something. So I think when people are stuck with describing reality in one way and not seeing the other ways to describe it that are equally true, that they can run into trouble.
Thanks again to Jonathan Robinson for joining me today on Skeptico. I tee up one question from this interview, and that is, what do you make of the idea of using technology to amp up these spiritual pursuits, which is essentially what Jonathan's saying there? Is there an inherent contradiction there? Is there some, what I like to call, backdoor materialism, where it's like, hey, you know, it's really not about gaining things and getting more, except if we can get more of this, that'd be really good. You know, I think there's an inherent contradiction there, but I think it's one that we have to balance. Oh, no, I'm giving an answer to the question that I just asked, but maybe you have a different answer. If you do, let me hear about it. Of course, the place to do that is through the Skeptico website, where you can leave a comment, leave a Facebook comment or a regular comment. Both are there. You can jump on over to the forum, talk to us over there. All those things work. Hey, by the way, I wanted to mention, you know, I was recently at this book signing of this really cool graphic artist who I ran into through my friends at Grammarica, Darren and Graham, whose show I really like, and Napoleon Doom, who does some amazing artwork for them, has published this graphic novel. And it's really cool, and I'm going to try to link to that in the show notes. So I just wanted to invite you, if you are interested in that kind of stuff, check it out. I also wanted to mention that I have this desire, this interest to get into video more and maybe even down the road do some kind of film project. So if there's anybody out there who has experience with that, particularly editing or production, do let me know. Drop me a note and see if we can connect and share some ideas about that. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Skeptico. I have some good shows coming up, I think. I think you'll like them. Please stay with me for all of that. Do share this show with anyone who you think would be interested in learning more about these topics or just sharing these ideas. So take care and bye for now.